You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, October 20th, 2010. This is episode 154, Getting and Keeping Volunteers. Welcome back, everybody. So happy you joined us. This is episode 154 of the Wells Tech Podcast, and I'm one of your hosts, Martin Spriggs. And joining me, as usual, from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you as usual and enjoying some fall weather here in Sleepy Eye. Has this been a gorgeous fall or what?
The weather's been fantastic. We could use actually a little rain. So it's been very dry. It's been one of the driest October so far in Wisconsin. I don't know how it's happening, how it's working in Minnesota, but we could use a little moisture. They said it's supposed to be a warm winter, too, so that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, after last winter and 900 feet of snow that we dealt with, it'll be nice to...
Is that how much
hopefully.
You got?
Yeah.
Wow.
I measured.
That must have been a record.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
A little cave that you kind of carved out in there to get out of your house. Yes. Well, you don't have
you
to go
are
too
laughing,
far.
But it's true. It was a lot.
Yes, I agree. Anyway, we should probably get to business here, and this is our second show, our second edition of our focus for church and school offices and the people that work in them. And we got some real positive feedback from the first time we did this, as we had an interview with the church secretary, our church school secretary, and we are continuing that focus with a conversation about volunteerism, which really is one of the most important tasks that goes on within a church or school office.
Yeah, and I don't know about your church, Martin, but our efforts at or our lack of efforts at recruiting volunteers sometimes then filters down to the church and school office worker who has to be in the dredges trying to find those volunteers when they don't speak up in meetings and things.
Or
and
worse, so, have to do it themselves.
Exactly. So we wanted to just kind of take a special focus at some technology tools and techniques to assist with recruiting volunteers and keeping those volunteers happy and continuing to volunteer into the future.
One happy note about this topic is there are literally a ton of resources on the internet for advice on recruiting volunteers, keeping volunteers, rewarding volunteers. There's all kinds of lists. There's some websites for scheduling volunteers, and we'll put a lot of our research into the show notes. We won't have as much time to go over each one of those, but that's the good news, that if you're interested in kind of taking your volunteer programs to the next level or even getting it to a level, there are tools on the internet, and there's a lot of content on the internet about the topic.
Yep, and I think one of the best tools you found was just a really simple article that we wanted to look at called The 7 Deadly Sins of Recruiting Volunteers, because I think a lot of the issues we have with volunteerism isn't getting people to volunteer, but doing it the right way, having them comfortable with the whole volunteer process, because there's people out there that just aren't ever going to speak up and say, I'll do it, you know, if you ask for volunteers.
Yep.
Sometimes that technique just doesn't work well.
Right. So 7 deadly sins of recruiting volunteers, and again, we'll put the link in the show notes, but sin number one is, and some of these are tongue-in-cheek, and that's kind of, it makes the reading a little bit more enjoyable, but I think no less applicable. Sin number one is expect announcements to get volunteers. Both you and I kind of chuckled at this one because we know how true this is, and probably the reason that it's sin number one, that just putting a note in the bulletin or briefly announcing it after church usually doesn't net the volume or even the quality of volunteers that you're looking for.
That's right, Martin. Unfortunately, people aren't just jumping at the bit to volunteer for everything that comes up in our churches and schools. But the author of the article made a good point when he said that he spoke to someone and they said, "Why didn't you volunteer?" And they said, "Well, we were waiting for you to ask us. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be happy to work with you, but I'm never going to volunteer." Mm-hmm. So perhaps it's just that they're looking for an invitation or a personal touch in that process, not just asking for volunteers, but actually speaking to someone directly and asking them to work with you on a particular project.
Yeah, people want to be asked. And that supports a good volunteer database and a time and talent bank that you maintain and ultimately use, because that will be your best source for people with the skill sets that you're looking for and people that have essentially signed up at some point in the past and are probably just waiting for you to ask. Mm-hmm. Sin number two, Sal, you want to take that one?
Sure. It says, go it alone. Mm-hmm. And I chuckled at this one because it basically is saying that if you're looking for volunteers, then you need to volunteer yourself. You need to be involved with it, and then you need to partner with other groups that maybe can help you in some way in that volunteer process. And so instead of just trying to change the world yourself, you know, look for other groups and things that might be involved. You know, in a church or school setting, perhaps a good example is our ladies' aid group, which is typically senior ladies in our congregation, partnering with our youth group at our annual corn festival. We sell pies, slices of pie. And maybe those two groups wouldn't necessarily have worked together on a project, but it fits with both of them. The ladies love baking pies, and the youth group have a lot of fun manning the station and taking care of all the tickets and things that they need to collect for the pie sale. Mm-hmm. So, just kind of looking maybe a little bit outside the box for partners and things to
like
go
that.
With it.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Sin number three, recruit lifetime individuals, not short-term project teams. And this is really true as well. It's really hard to get volunteers to sign up for the long haul, but it's a lot easier to encourage and entice somebody to say, hey, I can do that for 6 months or 3 months or this ad hoc committee or this small-ish project. And what I've found over time is that as they get involved, they get excited about what they're doing, they see results, and they're willing to sign up for another one and another one, and they get to do new things as well. So I think that's great advice.
Mm-hmm. Another big no-no, sin number four, is assume that no means never. If someone tells you no this time, don't ever ask them to help you again because they're not interested. And that would be the wrong approach to take, Martin, because no may just mean not now. This may not be a good time for them. But as the next project rolls around, you should revisit with that person and see if they can be involved this time around.
Mm-hmm. The next one I really liked, fall into the BIC trap, which stands for butt in the chair, or butt in chair, or the warm body approach. We just need somebody to fill this spot, so we will take anybody willing to raise their hand or who has two legs, two arms, and is breathing. And not always the best strategy. In fact, sometimes it's better to leave that chair empty than put any old butt in there. And that's the point of sin number five, is, you know, make sure that you're putting people in there and setting them up to win as opposed to, you know, just trying to fill a spot and then watch them struggle.
And sin six is actually directly tied to that. It says be people-driven rather than position-driven. And what they're warning against there is the fact that sometimes it does take a specific skill set to perform a particular volunteer position, and you're really setting yourself and your volunteer up for some disappointment if you put them in a position that doesn't fit with their skills. So you know, don't stretch it to say, oh, if so-and-so is willing to volunteer to head up all the maintenance in our new project that we're setting up, and they don't have any maintenance type skills, that there's going to be a real comfort comfort level or a winning situation there. So just be careful of the skills that you're looking for and make sure they match.
Right. The last one is a little bit fuzzier, and it's Sin 7, give the position the wrong title. And they're really talking about volunteer organizers in general, but I think it's probably equally as important to make sure that the positions that you're volunteering for are accurate and people understand what the job entails. And I've seen that that sin committed over and over again, where it's kind of a little fuzzy job description that you're providing for the position, and that somebody gets in it and they're kind of lost because they thought it was something else that they were signing up for, and really the position was total other end of the spectrum. So always good to give very clear descriptions of what you're looking for, and the time commitments necessary. Don't fudge on those either. If it's going to take 10 hours a week or 2 hours a week, make sure that you say state that clearly and that that's understood.
So I think those are really good ideas for us to keep in mind and maybe revisit that list over time as we do our volunteer recruitment, just to make sure that we're not crossing the lines there and that we're thinking clearly about the things we're asking our members to do from their perspective. You know, it's real easy to kind of be on a high horse and say, oh, they should be doing this, but, you know, looking at it from their perspective and what you're actually asking them to do.
Yep. And we've put together a bunch of other resources. In fact, we've categorized them into four different groupings: tracking, administrating, communicating, and incenting. And there's a really good slide deck that we found about incenting or rewarding volunteers, and just they kind of go through an A to Z of different ways to reward volunteers or incent them, and I thought some of them were extremely creative.
Yeah, I'm looking at the LMNOs, and it says that you can reward your volunteers with a package of lifesavers and say thanks for being a lifesaver, or do oatmeal cookies and provide cookies and snacks just to make them feel appreciated, or maybe a bowl of fruit or something like that. Decorate tote bags and say thank you with a special bag. And there's lots of other fun ideas here so that you can actually, you know, show them that you appreciate the work that they're doing.
Yeah, even if they're corny, it just shows them that, yeah, you have thought about it and that you are appreciative of what they're doing.
Actually, if they're corny, they would fit well with me because I'm real good at corny. So. A lot of reasons. So these ideas came from a website called Volunteer Spot, and we definitely want to include that link and, you know, have you guys go and check out Volunteer Spot. It is a Web 2.0 tool, and you can sign up for free. They do have a premium version that gives a few more extra bells and whistles, but what it does is it really tackles the tracking and the administration side of things for you, because once you have an account, you can organize events and it will send out emails to people inviting them to volunteer for your events. And you can get down and get very granular with what you want. For instance, if it's an event that has certain time periods you want to fill, like our pie stand, we wanted people to work for two-hour time slots, then you can set up your volunteer sign-up to show the different time slots. You can limit how many people you need for each particular time slot. And you can even say if you need them to bring something, like we need you to bring a pan of bars to this event or whatever it might be. And it's all handled through email. They get the emails, they get a link to go to the website and register to volunteer in a particular time slot or on a particular day or for a particular event. They can indicate if they're able to bring things that you need to be donated for the event. And then you, as the organizer of the event, can go back and check out who's volunteered and how many slots you still have open and how many things are being donated for the event as well. So very slick tools, and really, I would say, uber simple to deal with the website. It's actually kind of fun to set up your events. You can make them recurring events, and lots of different ways that you can manage your events on the volunteer.
That would work well. Our congregation participates in a county fair, and the congregations in the county commit to manning a booth at the fair. And this would be a great way to do it cross-congregation. So if you've got a number of spots open, you could sign them up that way. And, of course, everybody has the old flower charts and the, you know, refreshments for a Bible study and those kinds of things. So all kinds of tools available to encourage people to do that. Child care is another big one. So
absolutely.
Good stuff.
Another thing we wanted to mention is that when you do communicate, you make your communication, at least your electronic communication, very professional with your volunteers. Show that you care about them by investing a little time in your professional communication with them. One of my hugest pet peeves there is to get an email where everyone who's on the volunteer list gets copied on the email.
Oh, yes.
So before you even open it, you're seeing about 100 different email addresses in your face. And what that does is open all those people up to spamming, because their email addresses are being shared in that way. It also allows them to hit reply all, and you get a whole conversation, you know, copied to those.
Perpetuate the problem, yes.
Exactly. So
not a real big incentive to volunteer when you have to submit it to that stuff.
No, it doesn't look very professional at all.
Yeah.
But a good solution would be either to just blind carbon copy the people that you're sending to, or to use a tool like MailChimp, which is a free mass email tool. We've talked about that in the past on the podcast, Martin.
Subscription-based, so people can sign up or unsubscribe if they get tired of your stuff. Yep. Speaking of volunteerism, our interview today is with a person, Neil Hankowitz, who is the manager of communication services at Wells Kingdom Workers, who's all about volunteers. That's really his job, is to communicate with people who are interested in serving in many capacities, in a volunteer capacity, for Wells Kingdom Workers. And Neil was good enough to sit down with us earlier to talk about their work, their important work. They've been a valuable partner to the Synod for many years, and his work there is really important as far as trying to collect volunteers, encourage, keep volunteers, and send them. And let's listen to what he has to say about his work with Wells Kingdom Workers. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Neil Hankowitz, Manager of Communication Services for Wells Kingdom Workers. Good morning, Neil, and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me aboard.
Oh, our pleasure. Maybe a first step here is for you to take a couple minutes, introduce yourself to our Wells Tech listeners.
Well, I am the manager of communication services for Wells Kingdom Workers, as Martin, you've already stated. I am a member of Wind Lake Lutheran Church Living Water Lutheran Church in Wind Lake, Wisconsin. I have been here at Wells Kingdom Workers for about 18 years.
Wow.
And I have four children, and am just loving what I'm doing here at Kingdom Workers and for my church.
Very good. I remember you're a good singer too, Neil. Like to do some choir work as well.
Yes, in my off time, I have a couple of choirs that I direct, really enjoy being involved in the music end of things, too.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about the work of Wells Kingdom Workers. It's most of our listeners probably have heard of Kingdom Workers, and they kind of maybe have a vague idea, but maybe you give us a little bit more of the detail and the scope and the size of your volunteer efforts that you coordinate.
Okay. Wells Kingdom Workers' primary focus is to get lay people involved in mission work. And we do this both locally in the United States and North America, but also around the world. And we're able to achieve that through three main divisions of Wells Kingdom Workers, that being the Christian Volunteer Corps that focuses on world missions abroad. And then the Faith in Action, which focuses on getting people involved in the United States. That also includes Travel Canvas Witness, which a lot of people are familiar with. And then the Builders for Christ program, which gets people involved in helping build churches. That is largely focused on helping churches within the United States, but we've also done some work in Africa and Japan and so forth. And then we also have our chapters. We have 16 chapters across the United States, and that those are people that are have a common interest in getting lay people involved as well. So it's kind of our people on the ground and getting people involved. When I first started with Kingdom Workers, we had about 3,000 people on our mailing list. Now we have well over 17,000 people on our mailing list that are continually getting plugged into Wells Kingdom Workers.
That's awesome. Tremendous.
And then every year we figure about 3,000 people that are actively involved in one aspect or another serving our Lord.
So these chapters, Neil, and this is an area of Kingdom Workers that I'm not really familiar with, do they just grow organically, or do you set them strategically throughout the country or the world?
What we try to do is, as we are making our Kingdom Worker presentations, we find an area of interest, and we try to build our chapters around that area of interest. We try to find a key pastoral leader that will eventually serve as the chapter's spiritual advisor. And then we get a number of people involved, try to set up a chapter board, and then let the chapter have at it. They do have articles of incorporation that they try to put together that will kind of be their leading document. But then they try to adopt a number of local projects and get people involved.
Very good. Neil, our show today, the podcast that you're a part of, is specifically focusing on volunteerism. That's why we thought it would be great to have you on. And we're just trying to give congregations and schools ideas or tips that they can use for finding and motivating volunteers. And I'm just wondering if you have some ideas that you could share with them.
Definitely. We have a number of people on staff that are able to come and make presentations to schools and churches and to the related organizations of those schools and churches. These presentations are free of charge. There's no charge to the congregation or the school. But we do try to come with a full package. This presenter will, of course, bring a PowerPoint presentation that is available. But we also offer the Mission Information Center, which is a venture that is jointly done by Wells Kingdom Workers and the Wells Board for Home Missions and World Missions. All the mission display kits and so forth are available right here through Kingdom Workers. Any Wells mission that there is a Wells presence, we have that information here. So if there is a mission connect that a congregation or a school would like to do, Kingdom Workers can come and we can provide the kits and displays for that as well.
So to take that maybe down to the congregation level, obviously congregations are volunteer organizations. Just in your experience in working with the thousands of volunteers that Kingdom Workers has worked with over the years, any advice to them as they're trying to recruit volunteers for their own ministries?
Go ahead.
No, that. Go right ahead, Neil.
Okay. The best thing is word of mouth. There are people that have been involved in missions in one way or another, and that number is growing. And typically what we do is when we come on site to a congregation or a school, we try to contact somebody in the area that has already served in missions. And we bring that person along. And there's nothing better than bringing someone who has walked the walk and talked the talk. that can attest to the excitement that is on a mission field and talking about their Lord Jesus to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So word of mouth is a number one way to get people involved.
So volunteers recruiting volunteers, basically.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's got a heavy role of communication involved in that whole process, you know, being able to get that word out about whatever project you're working on or are supporting. And I'm just wondering, then, with your role at Kingdom Workers, being in communication services, do you have any tips related to communication?
One thing that we're really excited about right now is our new website that we hope to roll out within the next week or so. The new website is going to feature stories from the mission field, but some new ways of getting people involved is through Facebook and through Twitter. And we're finding... Normally, you consider Facebook and Twitter for the younger people, but we're finding that the seasoned citizens that are specifically involved through Builders for Christ, but also through Faith and Action, they're becoming quite more interested in getting on to Facebook and connecting with their family and friends. So we think that the addition of these, especially these two new tools, are going to be really neat for people that are involved in Kingdom Workers.
So you would envision kind of these online conversations to promote interest, to share opportunities, that kind of thing?
Yes, exactly. And then in the process, while these people are serving themselves, they will be able to drop their stories. Again, not only for their family and friends, but everybody else that's tuning in through Wells Kingdom Workers as well.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned briefly about your website improvements. Any other things you're excited about in that regard? I know that it's been kind of a long journey to do a new and improved website. It's not an easy task. What are your hopes as this thing launches? Is it to increase volunteerism, increase communications? So are there some new features that are rolled out?
I think yes to all the above.
Okay.
We want to provide a source where all our volunteers that are out there right now kind of have a home base to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
To get plugged into what else is happening in Wells Kingdom Workers, but to also use the website as a tool to encourage other people to get involved. Some of the features that we have on our website is our mission project list. Every year, Wells Kingdom Workers brings out a new mission project list, and we ask people to support that financially and through their prayers. That's a popular page on our site. Another page on our site is layworker opportunities. Every year we have new layworker opportunities through the Christian Volunteer Corps and Faith in Action. And that's where people can turn to find out where could they possibly serve. So that's another popular page of our site.
Sounds like you're really capitalizing on the social aspects of the web, and I can see that as a real positive thing in terms of volunteerism, connecting people and sharing stories and allowing them to grow from those stories and be motivated in that way. So looking forward to that new website. It's still going to be at the same address, I assume, wellskingdomworkers.org?
Correct.
All right.
Very good. Blessings on that work, Neil, and your continuing service there. And that's exciting work, and I know that a lot of people that have had great experiences through Wells Kingdom Workers, and there's something about being a volunteer that that really is inspiring, and I think their stories are really neat to read. I enjoy those, so keep those coming.
Great. Thank you very much.
Neil, thank you for the time again. Blessings on your continuing work, your continuing important work there with Wells Kingdom Workers. You know, there's some just, Sally, some neat stories that come out of Kingdom Workers all the time as they do some wonderful work across the Synod and across the world.
Absolutely, and we're excited to see that new website that you're putting together, Neil. We'll be keeping tabs on that. We'll make an announcement in the coming weeks when the Kingdom Workers website has been updated.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Neil, very much. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Martin, you are a good man. You've provided us with ministry resources.
I created a ministry resource
today.
Yes.
You've been blogging lately about a new venture in your congregation.
Yep. I fall in and out of my blog, and now I've kind of renewed my emphasis in using the blog. It's at blog, I think it's, what is it, blogs.wells.net/technology. And we'll put the link in the show notes. But I'm blogging through our church's experience with launching a Facebook page. I get a lot of calls on Facebook, and, you know, should we use it? I talk at conferences about it, but I had real firsthand experience. So I decided, not just for that purpose, but our church had a use for a Facebook page. So I'm going to blog through our experiences with Facebook, from the presentation to the church council, to the setup, to the promotion, to the use, et cetera, et cetera. So if you would go to our wells.net blogs, you will see installment number one, which is just the getting started blog. And I'm going to post another one in a couple of days about promotion. I put together a bulletin insert and some different tools that we're going to use to get people signed up. One of the big drivers behind our use of Facebook is a way to connect with every member, at least every member that will join the Facebook page, about a Through the Bible in 1 Year program that we're starting in January, where we're trying to get all of our members to read through the Bible. And we're providing low-cost, nice 1 Year Bibles for everybody to purchase and join the program. And we use our Facebook page as a way to continue to encourage people, to encourage discussions about the reading for the day, those kinds of things. So we'll let you know how it goes. If you want to follow along, blogs.wells.net/technology.
And kudos for you documenting that process. I think that's something people really appreciate, just knowing the thought process that you guys go through and kind of watching it develop along the way. So we'll be watching for that next blog post.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
I think we're down to our picks of the week. Tips or picks, because mine really isn't a pick per se, but yours is.
Mine is. Did we mention earlier how much I like corny things?
Mm-hmm. You're in the right town, too. You've got the corn days. What do they call that over there?
Yeah, that's
buttered,
right.
Buttered corn days.
Buttered corn days and sleepy eye. Yeah. Yep. And now a corny podcast, but a wonderful podcast that my family has enjoyed for many years. And it just struck me that I never have talked about it on the Wells Tech podcast, but people out there might enjoy it as well. So thought I'd share it today. It's called The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. Mm-hmm. And it debuted, I think, maybe back in 2005, right when podcasting was really starting to take off. We found this podcast and we've followed it literally since then, enjoying installments over what they call their seasons. They group together their storylines into about 12 to 15 podcasts and call those a season. And they usually have cliffhangers at the end of their seasons and things. The premise of the podcast is the world's most brilliant scientist has invented a time traveling machine. And his arch nemesis, the evil Dr. Steve, has stolen his time travel machine. Luckily, there are two of them. He had extra parts, so he built two at the time. Mm-hmm. And they chase each other through time and space, with Dr. Steve's main goal being to visit historic events and steal something that he can bring back to the present and steal and sell on eBay. So that's how he's going to profit from his time traveling, selling things on eBay. But in the course of it, they go through a lot of history, which is very educational. We've learned a lot along the way. And they do a lot of slapstick kind of comedy built into it. And you just have to listen for a little bit, and soon you will be hooked on these really fun characters. Just amazing, the creativity of people and having a podcast as an avenue. They've really developed a fun show. And over time, they've kind of monetized their podcast by charging for the archived episodes. So let's say you just find the podcast now, they're on season 8, and you want to go back to listen to the others, you'd have to purchase those from their website. Until this week, they wrapped up season 8. That's going to be their last season of The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. And to celebrate, they made the entire podcast free. So you can go to Dr. Floyd, that's DrFloyd.com, and download all 8 seasons. And I think that if you're looking for something especially family-friendly, maybe even school-friendly, that you could listen to as a classroom treat or whatever, the episodes are typically 5 to 10 minutes long, so not a real huge investment. Mm-hmm. Kind of done like an old-timey radio show, and very, very fun to listen to. Check it out.
Very good. I remember you gave me these discs. I think you burned them to CDs. And it was like the first ago. 3 episodes or something
first
like that.
First 3 seasons, yeah.
Yeah, seasons, yeah. And mm-hmm. I know we played these on one of our trips down to Florida, I think, back, you know, way back. And you know, my family thought they were extremely corny, but I think they were good entertainment. Yeah, you know, we listened all the way down, and I remember the evil Dr. Steve to this day.
Yeah.
So,
well, you can actually follow Dr. Steve on Twitter. He is Evil
right?
Mastermind on Twitter, and Dr. Floyd is Dr. Floyd, Dr. Floyd on Twitter as well. So I actually had a tweet from Dr. Floyd this week myself. So we're good buddies.
All right. That's a great pick, Sally. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. My pick is not a pick. It's really a tip, and it is a productivity tip. I do some productivity seminars, and I've done some classes on that. And one thing that I have found really helpful that I've kind of taken to the next level recently is the ability to use 2 monitors for your workspace. And for a long time, I had one external monitor and my laptop monitor. But I found that to be less useful because, well, the laptop monitor screen, it's a little small, it's a little bit different resolution, it's set at a little bit different angle, and it was just kind of a pain, and I wasn't using it as well as I would have liked. So I did a little research and figured out that with at least my particular laptop and many of the modern-day laptops, is you can hook up 2 monitors, 2 external LCD monitors to the same laptop. I happen to do it with a VGA connection and a DVI/DisplayPort connection because the monitors that I have support those. And I found it to be a really helpful tool for my work. My work environment. So I've got one screen that's kind of dedicated to communication. So I have email, calendar, you know, my Outlook over there, and then I have other web-based kind of tools over there. So my web and email is on one screen, and then all my document stuff is on the other screen. And if there's a time where I need to refer back and forth to an email and then a document, et cetera, it's really easy. So in the show notes, I'll put a bunch of tips here. One of them would be make sure that if you're going to do this, your computer can support it. A desktop computer would need probably a different video card, one with what they call 2 heads, 2 VGA heads. And obviously, it would have 2 VGA ports that would go to 2 different monitors. And the computer, if you're using a Windows system, most systems actually automatically detect that, and you can configure it so that it produces the extended screen that you want. You don't just duplicate the screen, you extend the screen so that it shares the content. Another thing is make sure, I would really encourage you if you're going to get 2 that they be the same resolution. Preferably the same monitor if you can swing that. I did a little bit of research, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well, of I think it's an HP monitor for about $125, 20-inch, which is perfectly fine. 2 20-inch monitors is going to be better than 1, you know, bigger 28-inch monitor, which, and it might even be cheaper. And put them side by side so that your eye is essentially tricked into thinking that this is one big surface. if they're different resolutions, different kinds of monitors, then I think it's a little bit more of a challenge, like the one monitor I had with my laptop screen. If your laptop doesn't support, let's say, a DVI port and a VGA port, there are different devices that you can buy that would make it do that. One is from Matrox. I think it's DH2Go, it's called. I think it's $120 as well. So if you don't even have the right laptop, but you have the ability to grab two monitors and probably for under $400, $300, you could get this set up and put it together pretty easily. You really don't need any software. You know, to make this happen, use your Windows system. We'll do that automatically for you. I found it is a real productivity saver. I'm not moving Windows around, opening, closing, you know, doing the whole Alt-Tab thing to go from screen to screen. I think it's a real savings, so it's something to consider, and that would be my tip of the week.
And I am 100% in agreement with you, Martin. I'm sitting here looking at two widescreen monitors as we talk. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that maybe if you're listening and you think, yeah, right, you guys are spoiled. You got to be kidding me that you actually need two monitors. You need to try it. Mm-hmm. And once you try it, you'll feel
understand.
The power of it. You'll really appreciate it and stuff. I had the opportunity to spend quite a bit of time in Mississippi this year at my family home and worked on a laptop during that time without my two monitors and mm-hmm. on a low-res laptop as mm-hmm. it worked out. And boy, did I miss my screen and being able to see a lot of things at once. It was just really hard to live with that after you've made the adjustment to having the wider view of all of your different things you have running. So I appreciate this tip, and I recommend it as well.
So how do you do that, Sally? Do you have one monitor dedicated to certain applications, or do you just kind of shove things around as it meets your work needs?
I move stuff all over the place, but I have a unique situation. Both of these monitors are both analog and digital, mm-hmm. and I actually have two computers, one that I use the analog settings on and the other that I use the digital settings on. And then I switch with a switch box between the two.
You're even geekier.
So I'm using the same two monitors for two computers.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting, and it works really well for me.
Uh-huh. Cool. And it's not as expensive as you might think. You can get LCD monitors pretty cheap nowadays. You know, a decent 20-inch for $120 is not unusual. You know, stay with the HPs, Dells. Don't go with the knockoffs, but stay mainstream and you should be fine.
Okay, and then I have one more confession to make. This is a techie kind of confession, mm-hmm. but if you don't want to go with brand new monitors, you can be like my husband who's using the old huge box monitors, which we have a million of those
sitting
around. The
CRTs, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually has three of them hooked up to his computer side by side. So he's one up Jim Martin. He's
oh,
got
my gosh.
It's a really wide view, but you know, if you're doing Logos and have 500 windows open doing your sermon studies and things, it really helps.
Yep, it does. Yep, absolutely. Let's move on to our Wells.net feature of the week.
Yeah, this is one I'm excited about. We're actually a little ahead of the curve on this one, and that we've talked about in the past that we have a lectionary. The lectionary series put out on a Google Calendar, and we'll include a link in the show notes for that because there's instructions on our Wells Tech Wiki. If you're a Google Calendar user or you want to be a Google Calendar user to take advantage of this, just follow those simple instructions that are posted there. And what you'll get integrated with your Google Calendar is on each Sunday or each special service day like Thanksgiving Day and Good Friday and those kind of days that have dedicated pages in the lectionary planning booklet, you'll get that lectionary planning information integrated with your Google Calendar on those worship days. So you'll have the readings, the prayer of the day, the hymns of the day, the color, all that information available to you in your Google Calendar. And the reason I'm mentioning it today is because we just added to our lectionary series year A for the upcoming 2010-2011 church year. up until a week or so ago, the Google Calendar ended at the end of October, but mm-hmm. now it has been extended into another church year. So if you're a user of the lectionary series in Google Calendar, just be happy that the new information is included now. And if you aren't using it, you might want to check out this wiki page and begin using it.
Yeah, very handy, because you can put this on, and you've done this, you've actually mocked this up and put it on a final website where you can actually embed the calendar, and you click the link and you see all the resources right there. So you see the lessons in the Psalms, you see the supplementary lectionary, the prayer of the day, verse of the day,
that's right,
hymn of the day, and even the color of the day. So that was, when I was in the ministry, that was always a challenge. You know, what color are we today? You know, do we switch? Are we green? Are we white? So great tool.
Yes, my husband's worn a different color than the altar pyramids before us, his soul, unfortunately, because that's a challenge.
That is.
Guys that are listening that aren't pastor types, you just can't appreciate the stress they go through.
That's right. All right. And it is a miracle every time they match. So.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Community feedback. Let's move on.
We heard from this fellow named Martin.
Martin
he sent
is
us
on
to a YouTube
list
video.
Again. Yeah, I found an awesome YouTube video for all you people who use PowerPoint. There's lots of resources written about PowerPoint. This is a cool video that talks about how best to optimize the PowerPoint experience, and it kind of brings in all some of these little tips that you hear. You know, no more than 7 words on a slide, and even talks about some tools within PowerPoint that would make the PowerPoint go a little bit more smoothly, like extending your monitor so that you see on your screen both the slide and the notes, but the presentation tool, whether that's a monitor, TV, or a projector, sees just the slide itself. So you have the ability to do this dual thing, and you have your notes there, which then you don't have to read it off the slide. You've got your notes in front of you, and you can still face the audience. You don't have to crank your head around and look at the screen with the rest of them. Really good tools there that he's mentioning. So take a look at that video, that YouTube video.
Very good. Via Digo, we heard from Gail Potratz at Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, and she shared a link to a recent blog post from Free Technology for Teachers, where he's pointing to the PBS Kids website, specifically to their site associated with a TV show called Cyber Chase. Mm-hmm. And they have 45 educational games that they've created for 3rd to 5th graders, kind of math oriented, a mm-hmm. lot of logic stuff, that kind of thing. This is one that I actually have included on my school website, and I think it's very well done. The kids really enjoy these games. So if you're building up a resource site for children in your school or personally, then you might want to include PBS Kids Cyber Chase games.
Yeah, and that's a good encouragement, that if you don't have a resource page like this, or a links or a favorites area that you kind of collect all these things, probably a good idea. We throw a lot of them out in our podcast, but you probably have your own, and it's probably good to catalog those and bring those up for later reference.
Absolutely. In our school, it's a really popular place, and the kids tell me, mm-hmm. oh, I was playing my wacky, wonderful websites at home the other day, and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So I know they go to it outside of the school setting, which is a good thing, giving them safe places to go.
Great.
All right. Next up, we have some information from Jason Schmidt, our tweeting teacher in Gethsemane, at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. And first off, he gave us some feedback on our last show, Martin, mm-hmm. where we debuted my brand new Yeti Blue microphone. And Jason said it sounded great. So we thought it was definitely improvement when we listened to the show. It was kind of surprising that it sounded quite a bit better as far as sound quality. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's what everyone who's listening is experiencing as well.
Yep. We do our best to make it a pleasant listening experience, both with the sound itself and what we're saying. You know, sometimes we fail at both, but we're trying.
Vote of confidence.
That's
there.
Right.
All right. Next up,
I just
Jason
just covering my bases. You know, I'm not a sound engineer.
Okay, you are as good as we get.
Yeah,
so.
All we get.
Tech and Learning magazine link from Jason to 100 ways Google can make you a better educator. And this is just a big, long laundry list of
probably
things
100
that Google
things,
can do
huh?
for you. Yep, collaboration, news, search, communication. It's all covered there. And if you haven't investigated the possibilities with Gmail and Google Calendar, Google Sites, Google Reader, Google Earth, Google Wave, which is unfortunately going away, mm-hmm. but all of those things can combine to give you a rich experience in the classroom. And so maybe check out just one from the list of 100, and I bet you'll be a better educator for trying it.
Good. Thank you, Jason.
And he also shared a link to the stock market game. This is something I was not aware of, but it's a virtual learning experience for kids to experience the stock market. They're given a hypothetical $100,000 in an online portfolio, and they invest it and see how it grows or doesn't grow, possibly. Mm-hmm. So it does look like it's a fee-based activity, but covers the entire United States. They have people that do training sessions on it, a little bit more complex than just a simple thing, because it does take a bit of a learning curve, I guess, to to get involved with this. But the pricing, I can't remember what it is right off the top of my head, but when I checked it out the other day, didn't look too bad for a school to participate. It was in the maybe less than $50 range. So it was very reasonable if this is a skill that you're looking to improve with your students, some economics training, then this might be a good place to look.
Yep. Sally, I don't know about you, but when I remember being in grade school and us doing this kind of the low-tech way, where we would be given an imaginary amount of money, and then each day we'd have to get the paper and
the
look
newspaper.
At the real small print and find out, you know, how our stocks did, and then track that on our own piece of paper and do charts and, you know, those kinds of things. Now it does it all for you.
Yeah. But I don't know if kids know what a newspaper is or have seen us.
All right.
So
they pull out their iPad.
Do it electronically. Mm-hmm. So interesting conversation going on over on the Wells Tech listserv.
Yeah.
This is our email group, and someone posted a question about what people's favorite HTML editors are, and there was quite a bit of feedback, everything from Code Lobster to
Composer, Eclipse, Composer. Crimson.
There you go.
All these, and all of them do it a little bit differently. Some of them are definitely more programmer friendly. Others are more scripter friendly. But all of them, I think, anticipate the language that you're scripting or programming in, and do syntax highlighting and suggestions and those kinds of things. And it was a great discussion. Those of you not familiar with our listserv, our Wells Tech listserv, you can get information on that on our website. But there's some good questions that run through there once in a while. And there's always, and this is an example, always people willing to throw their hat in the ring with their thoughts about technology. There's no shortage of that. You'll usually get an answer.
And we all learn in the process, which is what I love. So.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we heard from Mark Hellman, who is a member at Pilgrim Lutherans in Minneapolis. And he wrote to us about an experiential learning trip that the students at Pilgrim took. This would be upper grade students in their elementary school. And this trip was led by teacher Luke Hartzell. And they actually went to the Czech Republic and attended school at Martin Luther School in the Czech Republic in Prague. And sounds like a really exciting trip. And reciprocating that, some of the students from that school will be coming to Minneapolis and attending school at Pilgrim. And they blog their experience. There's tons of photos, photo slideshows and things. So you'll want to check out the link that Mark sent us about this trip that they took.
Very good. Thanks, Mark.
And our last community feedback for today came from teacher Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and he sent us a link to the We Energy, which is your Wisconsin area energy provider, and they have a page specifically for educators with a lot of classroom resources that may come in handy. Related to science and different energy fundamentals and things like that that they've provided for educators. So check out this. You might want to focus on safety, renewable energy. There's videos, there's fun facts and games all related to different energy topics from We Energy.
And you can even request different resources for K-12 classrooms on electricity, natural gas, safety resources. So they do teacher resources. Great, great resource. And it's probably wise if you're not in Wisconsin to look at your local utility and see if they offer something similar, because I know that you often will go to the fair and they'll have some kind of green, you know, green booth and those kinds of resources available as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to everybody who provided feedback, and we would love to hear from you if you haven't done that before. First-time feedbackers are always welcome, and you can do that at wellstech.wells.net or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Many other ways to connect with us. Just go to the website and you can see a voicemail. You can participate in the listserv we mentioned. Those kinds of things we all appreciate. And we also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/wellstech. And if you are listening and you know of a church or school secretary who does not listen and may provide some help to them in some way, shape, or form, please let them know about the podcast so that they can get in on our conversations this week about volunteer resources.
Yeah, definitely. I think that all of them would appreciate learning about the different websites that we shared today.
Mm-hmm. Next week is, we've got Gail coming back and joining us, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin at Emmanuel Lutheran there. And we will be discussing some experiences that you had, Sally, at the Minnesota State Teachers Conference and your presentation there. And we will do a little bit of a preview of my presentation for the Wisconsin State Teachers Conference coming up at the end of next week. And you're also going to get some mini sound bites, maybe that's redundant, sound bites of people that you meet and greet there at the Minnesota Conference.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to rub elbows with some elementary school educators here in Minnesota, heading up to Brainerd this week, speaking on implementing technology in the classroom, and hoping to hear some real-life stories about how technology is affecting ministry in a positive way. So we'll be bringing you that coverage next week.
Great. Tune in then. Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Gelhar, All Through the Night, from her album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please tune in next week.